I did, and I know this is, you know, we got March Madness going on, you got spring football drills going on, the start of the Major League Baseball season this week, including our Atlanta Braves on Thursday. So a lot to enjoy this week in the college sports world.
Yeah, I mean, of course, when you have, I mean, the Braves are playing tonight here at SunTrust Park, two games, exhibition games against the Reds, and yeah, I mean, we're excited down here. There's no reason to think the Braves aren't going to repeat as NL East champions. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a signing or two around the corner that will pop up before Thursday afternoon. And
Craig Kimbrell.
Yeah, we'll see. We're looking. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not going to join you next week because I will be at the home opener. Yeah. I mean, I think the excitement here rivals, you know, or mid-90s, early-90s levels.
How cool. I saw one prediction from a publication in the preseason where they have Washington, Philadelphia, and Atlanta all either 90 or 89 wins. And how great of a season would that be when you've got all three teams battling it out to the final week like that?
That would be a lot of fun. Stressful in
Oh,
September,
absolutely.
but a lot of fun. To me, I think that's a little laughable. I don't think the Nationals can sustain that. And really, I don't think the Phillies can either. I mean, you're spending that much money on the worst defensive outfielder in the game and a guy who hits over 250 every other year. But hey, you know what? That's good for the Braves because they should make quick work of both of them. But no, if it's those three and it's a pennant race, that'll be fun too because you know, some of my best memories were pennant races. The 91 season. 92, they handled it pretty easily, but 93, the Braves and the Giants in the NL West, that was it's widely considered the last great pennant race because the year after that, you know, they didn't have, well, the year after that they didn't have a postseason, but that was when it expanded from two divisions to three divisions
Right.
in the National League, and the wild card was implemented.
I'm looking forward to seeing how Josh Donaldson does this year. I would love to see, and it's certainly a possibility, where this is not just a one-year deal for Donaldson with his Braves team. If he loves it enough, who knows? Maybe he'll give the team a little bit of a discount, and he could be a nice fixture for next few years there for the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, an Auburn guy, so and he's from he's grown up a Braves fan, so he understands, you know, kind of what the franchise is and what it means to a lot of people down here. And I love his attitude. I mean, I saw the quote today before the game at SunTrust Park this afternoon that he said flat out, you know, someone asked him, "What can you bring to this team?" And he said, "Look at the back of my baseball card. That's what I bring to this team."
Former MVP in the American League.
Bring it on. If that happens, here's the thing, like, people freaked out about Acuna batting cleanup. If you go Ender, Donaldson, Freeman, Acuna, where's the break?
Yeah, good luck with that.
Where's the break? Yeah, have fun with that because you're going to have to pitch to at least two of those guys, and that might not end well.
All right, so March Madness, what's your take? I love the fact that we had seven double-digit seeds in the field of 32. Little disappointing that's only one remaining, that being Oregon, the Pac-12 tournament champs. This year, a lot of Goliaths, not really David this year.
I'm fine with that because I'm a firm believer that the majority of people in the country, they like Cinderella to a point. They like Cinderella until it's time for Cinderella to go away. Because the true meaning of a championship is awarding a team that's championship worthy. And a Cinderella typically means that they have not done anything worthy to at least get to the dance, just other than, you know, being just sort of okay and then getting hot at the right time. So I'm fine with it. It was rather boring in the sense that you didn't have a ton of intrigue, although Duke yesterday obviously provided some. Tennessee did as well. I said on my radio show yesterday morning, it's been one of the more disappointing first weeks because you didn't have those, you know, frantic endings. You had a couple of them yesterday afternoon. You had LSU. You know, you had some other ones earlier, but it has been relatively tame. But I'm okay with chalk. I want to see the best of the best battle it out. You know, even Oregon, the 1-12 seed that's alive right now. I mean, watch Oregon play the last 3 weeks of the season. That's a pretty good team. You know, and they, in terms of injuries, you know, it took a little while to figure themselves out, but, I mean, they're pretty darn good. And then, what is it? Auburn's the second worst team in the field right now in terms of seeding. Or no, Virginia Tech is, but. You know,
well, no, Virginia Tech's a four. No, Auburn.
Oh, that's right. They're a four.
Yeah, Auburn's a five, and Oregon's the 12. That's it. Everything else is a one through four.
I mean, think about that. Auburn is the second lowest seeded team in the tournament right now.
Right.
The same Auburn that's been just an absolute thrill to watch the last 3 weeks, and really was in the top 20 for a long time this year.
Now, I understand the committee's, you know, stuck with knowing that Duke, Virginia, North Carolina, three teams from the same conference all got a number one seed. I've just wanted a little bit more creativity from the committee. I mean, for the second straight year, Florida State, to advance to the Final Four, they have to beat Gonzaga, and then if they win that, most likely they're seeing Michigan in the Elite Eight. It's like, I don't mind the two teams, but I love seeing different teams go at it, not the same teams for the second straight year, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but, I mean, the committee does, I mean, they do their best to do what the sport deserves. And, you know, I think if they start engineering matchups or predicting out, you know, how teams will do in the first couple rounds to make intriguing, Sweet 16 or Elite Eight games, or, you know, just do anything in terms of seeding these teams with any sort of predictive measurement, they're not doing their jobs. And, you know, if it works out this way, fine. You know, it is what it is. You know, I wish it would have been, you know, that you would see a little bit more diversity and that you could have situations where you do have new matchups. But, I mean, you know, they can't do that. If they do that, then the whole purpose of the tournament kind of gets thrown by the wayside, and you're trying to engineer things rather than let things play out for themselves.
Nine of the 16 teams remaining come from either the ACC or the SEC, five from the ACC, four from the SEC. And, you know, if given the choice, do I take the champion this year from those two conferences or the other seven teams, which is represented by five other conferences? I'm taking the ACC-SEC.
Without a doubt, because you're getting the three number ones. You're getting Kentucky, you're getting LSU, you're getting Auburn, you're getting Tennessee, you're getting Florida State, which I forget who it is that has an all ACC Final Four, but one of the TV guys does. I mean, that, if you're picking conferences, I would guess that 75% of the Final Four comes from either the SEC or ACC.
All right, your thoughts. First of all, I felt really bad, but then again, though, if you're in that situation, you've got to make the plays. I was really enjoying what Central Florida was doing to Duke yesterday, and the chance that, I mean, here they were up by four with the ball on a 2-on-1 break with under 2 minutes to go, tried to do the alley-oop, missed the dunk, and in the end, though, they still had their chances. This is just one of those times, and I said it last hour, that the basketball gods meant for you to learn from this disappointment, because that's the only way I can explain where if this game was being played in Jacksonville, that ball probably rolls in for Central Florida. Unfortunately, in Columbia, South Carolina, it rolled around the rim and fell off, and Duke wins.
Yeah, and I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Zion potentially, you know, getting a charge before he went to the line, and R.J. Barrett pushing off and a phantom hook and hold that wasn't called. And, look, I get all that, but, you know, those type of things happen. You can't look back and say, okay, those specifically cost UCF the game.
Right.
Because, like you mentioned, the alley-oop that was missed, I mean, that cost UCF the game, because that would have made it a six-point game. Instead, Duke, you know, gets the ball, drives right down. I think it was Reddish who hit a three, and suddenly what could have been a 6-point lead was a 1-point lead. And if it's six at that point, which I think was 1:45 left in the game, that's way different than what ended up happening. So, you know, it was a great game. It was probably the best game of the tournament. You know, that draws eyeballs. Duke is Alabama. Duke is the Yankees. Duke is the Patriots. You know, love them or hate them, they are who they are. And when they get tested like that, a lot of people pay attention. Here's the thing, too. There are a lot of people who hate Duke, but also had Duke winning the national championship. So you're talking about a very conflicted population.
Oh, very much so. I mean, I have Duke playing Florida State on the left side of the bracket in the Final Four. And on the other side, I've got Tennessee playing Kentucky. So
I mean, look, it's you're not alone. There's a lot of people that have Duke going a long way. So, you know, you kind of want to see upsets, but then you look around and say, okay, do I want to win? Because you're kind of getting pulled in two different directions there.
Hey, your thoughts about Tennessee. I mean, here's a team that has yet to play through the first two games. Actually, you go back for three games in a row, 40 minutes of basketball. Can you imagine how dangerous this team is when they are able to do so? And the fact that they didn't do it this first weekend and didn't do it to wrap up the SEC tournament weekend, you know, here's a great opportunity for this team against Purdue, and most likely they'll see Virginia in the Elite Eight. I love the fact that if you're Rick Barnes and that coaching staff, you know, these are things that you can sell your team on.
No doubt. You have teaching moments. You have pressure that you have or haven't responded to. And pretty much every team that wins a national championship this time of year has to go through, you know, at least one game where things get super sketchy. You know, if Duke wins it, Duke's already had it. If Tennessee wins it, Tennessee's had it one and a half times. I mean, Colgate was not nearly what Iowa was, I don't think, in terms of stress, but yet still important. So, yeah, those kind of things are very important for coaching staffs, especially for teams that, you know, have been successful for, you know, multiple years and have been in this situation, you know, deep in the NCAA tournament before, because you can basically say, hey, look, you know what? You're not all that you cracked up to be. And if you can say that as a coach and you still have, you know, a path to the national championship that isn't too far away from you, you love those situations because you can yell if you're Tom Izzo. You can ask politely if you're Rick Barnes. But you, either way, you can get across something to your players that is quite necessary this time of year.
Barrett Salee joining us again. Art, help me understand this, because I've been talking about this going on 2 months. You could just see this year different than probably the first time in 9 or 10 years, just usually with regards to college basketball, and especially when we talk about the SEC footprint of college basketball. We start paying attention near the last regular season week, the SEC tournament, and then March Madness. This year, that's entirely different. And it's even different when you look at it from a national standpoint. And I don't know what the ratings were in Atlanta, but what we saw nationwide and certainly what we saw here, we're talking about numbers somewhere between a college football regular season game and a Titans game. I mean, huge numbers. In fact, it was a 55% increase over last year on the CBS coverage, and it was the best average for the first weekend since 2010. So the best average in 9 years. And I know sports goes in cycles, but I have to be honest with you, I love seeing this. And I know a lot of it has to do with the success that Tennessee's had, but I think it has to do as well with success of other programs not usually getting that during the course of regular season. And I think that's helped generate this interest nationwide.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having superstars that you know helps. Superstars that are new certainly helps too, like Zion Williamson. You know, so, yeah, I mean, I think all those factors combined. Plus, I mean, look, I'm not going to say this just because I work for CBSSports.com or CBS Sports HQ or SiriusXM. I mean, college basketball is a better product than the NBA, just like college football is a better product than the NFL. It's more attractive. It's more entertaining. I mean, I don't want to sit there and watch James Harden dribble for 30 minutes. You know,
or walk. Wait, how about taking 5 steps?
Right.
I'm not exaggerating either, by the way, and that's the sad part. I mean, really, 5? Yeah. I could see 3, 5 steps. I mean, is that like the superstar discount or something?
I mean, people said that Tremont Waters might have walked against with LSU yesterday or 2 days ago. That in the NBA is just a normal play, you know. So, I think it's a more compelling product. I think people, you know, around the country, general sports fans. You know, care a little bit more now because they can sit there and say, okay, look, you know, we're getting the same teams on national broadcast from the NBA over and over again. You're getting a bunch of different ones, you know, with college hoops, different ones that have different dynamics, you know, and, you know, there are teams like Tennessee, you know, veteran, older guys that have been around the block who came back for a championship. There are teams like Duke, which are one and done. There's Gonzaga. There are teams like Wofford that are three-point, like Auburn, three-point machines. I mean, tell me Auburn's not interesting right now, watching that team play. I mean, that's about as fast as you can possibly be. So there's different styles, and that diversity that I think, you know, drives interest in general sports fans. Same thing with college football. I don't know how many people I've seen that are, you know, national media or just, you know, kind of basic sports fans that kind of taste a little bit of everything, say recently that college football has surpassed the NFL in terms of just general product, you know, entertainment value. So I think that's a big reason for it, and I think that'll continue.
Had to bring this up because it seems, and usually it happens after spring practice is over and sometime during the latter part of spring and throughout the summer. But one of the things that we can almost count on, besides weather getting hotter in the summer months and a Georgia football player getting arrested, well, we got it early this year. I don't understand why in this time, day and age, I mean, 2:42 in the morning Eastern time, two Georgia football players arrested, getting into, let me guess, a bar fight. Not a good look for the Bulldogs.
No, you know, and it happens at Georgia a lot. It happens, you know, a lot of different places. I do think that, you know, in terms of the city of Athens, Clark County, it's a little bit of a different dynamic than other college campuses. Not to say that stuff shouldn't happen. It shouldn't happen. There's no doubt. You know, I think there's more of a presence in downtown Athens, because it's a little bit of a bigger, you know, scene in a much more condensed area than a downtown area. So there are a lot of reasons for it. That said, a bar fight's a bar fight, and you're going to get popped if you're part of a bar fight, really, in any college town. So, you know, it goes back to something that I've said for a very long time. These palatial college football facilities that have been built the last 15 years, they're partially for recruiting, but the majority of the reason they exist is because coaches want to keep players in there. They want to keep an eye on them. They want to make sure they don't have to leave. And when they do leave, they're still college kids, and sometimes they do dumb college things. And I think this is a perfect example of that.
Well, one of the two players should know better. He's a senior wide receiver, Tyler Simmons. The other one, he probably, if it was you or me we're talking about, he's in his second semester, his final semester of high school. Instead, he's an early enrollee from Miami. So 2 months in, he's already arrested.
Yeah, so that's surprising on a lot of levels. One, I grew up in Atlanta. I've been to Athens quite a bit. I do know their ID laws at these bars are pretty darn strict as opposed to other college places where they're not. So that made me raise an eyebrow. The second is the fact that Tyler Simmons was involved. I mean, Tyler Simmons, his family lives in my neighborhood. I know his dad. And for him to be involved in something like this, that's surprising.
Having a chance once again to visit with Barrett Slee, had to bring this up before we let you go. Are there any other basketball programs or coaches squirming this week with the news that celebrity attorney Michael Avenatti getting arrested? He was trying to extort Nike, you know, trying to get more than $20 million in payments because he was threatening to use his ability to get publicity. And the fact that he was trying to do this right before the time to address the stockholders and everything else. But, you know, my question is, what information did he have that he wanted to throw out there on the eve of the quarterly earnings call for Nike?
Well, two things on that. One, you know the scene from Bill and Ted's where Excellent Adventure, where they say, "No way."
Yes.
Or Jason Bateman in Dodgeball. I feel shocked, Cotton. I'm totally, that's my response when I find out Michael Avenatti's sketchy. Like, no way, really? Would never have guessed that Michael Avenatti's sketchy. But no, I mean, you're right. Like, extortion's extortion. And if you're trying to extort Nike for $30 million, you're probably going to go to jail for a very long time. That said, I kind of want to know what the content of said extortion was.
Well, see, that's where I'm going.
I do kind of want to know what that is because, you know, was it worth $30 million? I don't know. But if it's worth $30 million in Michael Avenatti's mind, I kind of want to know what that is because even if it's not that valuable, it clearly had some sort of value. And yeah, I'm fascinated to know about that because this is now going to the legal system, and this involves Nike, and it involves an AAU coach, and it involves a lot of other people that are going to be looking out for themselves. And if they're looking out for themselves, then that might mean that some of this information gets disclosed. And last time I checked, there were a lot of schools in college athletics associated with Nike.
Hey, by the way, in case you don't remember the name, you've heard of it, just don't remember the association, he was the one that was representing Stephanie Clifford in the lawsuit against President Trump and Michael Cohen. And you go, who's Stephanie Clifford? Oh, that would be Stormy Daniels.
Incidentally, Stormy Daniels, former TigerDroppings.com message board poster and infamous LSU fan.
Really? Did she do it as Stormy Daniels or Stephanie Clifford?
I don't think she had either name, but she definitely was known. This is like way back when, like 09, 08, 07. And yeah, 100%.
You know, that just shows you we're all sports fans, C. Barrett. We're all sports fans,
right?
you know, so just be careful down the road. that's where we go with that.
There's always dots back. There's always, you know, like, well, everyone always says, there's always a tweet for something. Well, it all kind of gets back to college sports somehow.